Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, whether it's first responders, fire department, police, EMS, we all, I think most of us, stop and really appreciate the first responders in our communities around the country. And then, of course, with shootings and with police shootings and everything that's gone on, especially in the last 5 or 6 or 7 years, there is plenty of stress there, and not everybody ends up being a big fan of police in particular, but I think generally we do, and we kind of look at it from the outside of it in, right? We appreciate that they're there. We know that they serve a purpose. Oftentimes, most of us have very little interaction with first responders and with police officers, but we're sure glad that they're there. But it's one thing to kind of look at it from the outside in, but what is it like actually inside there? And from a Christian worldview perspective, from a ministry perspective, how in the world do you minister to members of that community, the first responding community, and that which is very difficult. You could just go look at divorce rates. You look at addictions. You look at abuse inside marriage. The numbers are really frightening, and the reality there is really, really difficult. And of course, where things are dark and where things are difficult and where people are broken, God calls us to go directly into that. So I met Ralph Thompson a couple years ago, who has founded Emergency Chaplains and providing chaplaincy care and assistance for first responders. So we're going to learn about how God brought Ralph into that ministry and what's it actually like down there on the streets with policemen and firefighters, first responders, and what is life like for them? Because generally we just see it on the news, we see it in social media, but actually in real life down on the street, what's that like? Ralph, thanks for being here with us today.
Yeah,
How are you?
Thanks, Steve. Great. Good to be here, man. Thanks for the invite.
You're very welcome. It's great having you on. This is a very, very important topic. And it's one, I think, that in the church we don't, I think there's so much that we take for granted, obviously, and first responders being one of them. But what was the road like that God took you down to get you into this ministry of emergency chaplains?
Well, you remember an event a few years ago called 9/11. After 9/11, the chaplains were in high demand. Local fire department asked me to be their chaplain, and at the time I was a pastor. I was an associate pastor. So chaplaincy became my hobby, and then the Lord just began to work in my heart. The main way that he called me into chaplaincy was through broken marriages. I just continue to see broken marriage after broken marriage. And the Lord sent me back to school to prepare for that. Even my wife, who I hope she's listening today. Can I say hey to my fan club?
Of course.
Oh, okay. Hey, Carter. Love you, baby. She's been sick last couple of days, and I was hoping she could come with me. But Carter, my wife, even went back to school and did a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in counseling so she could help us in that ministry. But it started out with broken relationships, how God got my heart.
Now, as a pastor, when you first walked into that as a chaplain to a fire department, there was your expectations and what kind of what you knew about the fire department world and first responders from the outside. But what was it like when you actually got in there?
Well, I grew up in the fire department.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, my dad was an assistant chief of a rural fire department. So I was riding fire trucks from the time I was about 5 years old. So I knew the culture, but at the same time, I was not one of them. I was an outsider.
Yeah.
And the main thing I had to do at that point is to earn my keep. I did that by going back to went back to training, did my EMT certification so I could ride the truck with the guys. That opened up an entire new ministry area that we do a lot of work in today, which is a crisis response ministry. And that's where we go out and meet people during their darkest time, usually during the death of a loved one.
Yeah.
But what that does, that puts us on level playing field with these responders. But if you don't speak their language, the thing about it is you've got to learn somehow to meet their needs, speak their language, in order for them to let you in the house.
And what was that like when you first came in? Obviously, I mean, they asked you to come in.
Right.
So there was obviously some kind of, they felt they had some kind of a spiritual need. Was that an issue, or is it an issue today? Because we often think that, you know, these are municipalities, these are cities, this is run by community, this is quote-unquote government. And we know there's supposed to be a separation of church and state, blah, 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 blah. So what was it like going in as a chaplain into that environment? And how did they kind of receive it, even though they asked for it?
It's funny that everybody knows that I'm the preacher. That's what they call me.
Yeah.
In a group, they typically are not very responsive. It's you're not really one of them, and you're not part of the group. But the rubber meets the road when you get one-on-one. And those are the times that we get into those private quarters. Or the thing that impressed me the most was when I walk into a station, fire station, police station, communications, that's somewhere else. Yeah. 911 communicators, tough job. I'll walk in, or one of my chaplains, now we have 52 volunteer chaplains.
Oh, that's awesome.
And somebody walks in with our uniform on, and one of the responders looks at him and says, "Hey, man, you got a minute." And then you're on holy ground at that time.
Yeah, because in the group setting, let's face it, it's a type A kind of testosterone environment.
Yeah, yeah.
So nobody's really going to kind of let their hair down, so to speak, in that environment. But when you get them one-on-one, do you find, and whether it's fire department, EMS, police, even 911 operators, do you find that there's a deep hunger there, a deep need because of the brokenness and how dark that environment is?
There's certainly a deep need to be met in their time of crisis. I don't know that it's clearly a spiritual need as far as the way that they would see it. It just depends on what I find out so many times. And we as Christians, if we're living out the Great Commission, do anyway. When we go to people, we're available to folks. We'll find, if we're sensitive to what's going on in their life, we'll find that God's already at work there. The old principle from experiencing God, God's at work all around us.
Yep.
You know, figure out where it is and jump on board with him.
And so what, generally, when you walk in there, you know, generally as a pastor, of course, we're always thinking gospel and opportunities to lead people to Christ. But when you mention crises and a crisis situation, what are those situations like inside a first responder's life?
Well, it's the same type of situations that are common to our population now, but it's magnified for these guys. You mentioned, and we've already talked a little bit about relationships, marriage and any type of family relationship, but also substance abuse, suicide's an issue, addiction, all those things, turnover within the department, all of those things are issues.
Yeah, we're going to dive into that. What is it like? What are they dealing with on a daily basis? And how do these people, like Ralph at Emergency Chaplains, how do they minister to these folks? How do they love them well in Jesus' name? This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. We'll pick it up there with Ralph when we come back right after this. Welcome back. It's the Steve Noble Show. I think most of us hopefully appreciate our men and women that serve as first responders, be it in the police department or fire or EMS, or even oftentimes to think about people that answer the 911 phone calls. That's a tough job because you're listening to mostly negative, bad, nasty things going on, and that's your job. You're listening to that all the time. People are hysterical most of the time, I would assume, and they got to deal with that and calmly just kind of take that in, turn around and dispatch the way they need to do their job. But goodness gracious, can you imagine for a minute what it's like to do that for a full-time job and to listen to that or to be on these job sites? You know, we see TV shows and all that kind of stuff. I think the reality for firefighters and for police and for EMS and 911 people is probably far darker and far more difficult than any of us ever stop to imagine. So that is definitely a place where God would call his people to go in and minister, which is why we're talking to my friend Ralph Thompson today. Emergency Chaplains, their website, ECHAP, like Emergency Chaplains, echap.org. Okay, that's the website, echap.org. And for those of you that are more local here in North Carolina, we're going to talk a little bit later about an event they have coming up on June 14th. But really just trying to understand what's it like down there in the trenches with our firefighters and our police and EMS and 911 operators? And how do you minister to them that? So, again, Ralph, thank you so much for coming in today and helping us understand this.
Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome. So let's go through, and if you can kind of give us an example. We were talking off the air kind of several different environments where you find yourself going in where there's really a specific need. There's personal crisis, which could be addiction, problems with marriage, officer injured or an officer shooting, officer involved shooting, crowd control, if you got a bad accident, and there's all kinds of stuff going on there. Homicides, of course. And then 911, we'll talk about that too. But and I asked you before off the air, are there some similarities? And you said these different areas, fire, police, EMS, and 911, are very different. So I want to make sure we address that as well. But just kind of give us some scenarios. And I know you can't say names or anything, but of what do these situations look like when you're going into them?
Well, the most volatile situations that we go into are the ones where an officer has been hurt or they have hurt somebody. The emotion's really high. I had a call early on in my career doing this of a law enforcement officer who had shot and killed a suspect. And typically, the SBI comes in, they'll kind of lock them down. And somehow this guy got out of the office before the SBI got there. Now, I'll never forget, he was a warrior. I mean, this guy was, he was a warrior. And he drove to my, he called me and says, I'm on my way to your house. Mm, wow. And he walks in still in his full uniform, body armor still on. And he literally falls in my arms, just weeping like a baby. And I'll never forget that. It really formed me in my ministry early on because I did know this man really as a warrior. I'd been with him in the car. And we had done some ride-alongs together. He was a no-nonsense officer, just a great servant, public servant. And he's forced with this split-second decision to have to take a life. And the thing that I would tell you about, one of the common threads for all first responders, regardless of the discipline, and when I say that, law enforcement, fire, EMS, and 911, is that when they signed up to do this, they signed up because they wanted to help people and they wanted to make a difference in the world. Now, it may be testosterone-driven.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Blue lights, red lights, you
sure.
know, sirens kind of thing.
Guns,
the adrenaline,
chase,
oh, yeah,
all
yeah.
that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes a certain type of person to want to run into that.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons that I'm able to understand them a little bit better, because I grew up doing that. I served as a firefighter from the time I was 18. And then I spent 12 years repossessing cars, so I really
yeah.
learned what that part
yeah.
was.
You've been
like.
In that world. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And so with that guy, because what we generally see and what we do on social media and what we do on YouTube is we tend to gravitate towards the worst examples,
mm-hmm.
and where you see what clearly looks like abuse and then what the shooting incident, but then like this bravado, almost like a robot-like insensitivity to humankind. But that's certainly what you experienced. Is a broken man that
oh,
did
yeah.
a tough thing.
Right.
That what do you think he was experiencing? Why do you think he fell to his knees? Just because of the reality that he took somebody's life.
Yeah, it changes your life forever when something like that happens.
Yeah.
They train for it. They train over and over and over. And actually, this particular officer had been military. So this was not his first rodeo
yeah.
when it comes to the training side. And I think he'd actually served a tour in either Iraq or Afghanistan. But this is that hand-to-hand, you know, face-to-face. And then, you know, what happens, I mean, if you're military, you can go on down the road, but now you've got to help them. A police officer's got to, they've got to go, and now they've got to render first aid. What they'll do is they'll watch this person struggle for their life and die right in front of their eyes.
Yeah.
And they have to live with that forever. Now the hard part is, as the years have gone by, these types of incidents are scrutinized more
sure.
and more.
Oh, yeah.
And I probably shouldn't get on the political side of it, and I won't, but that makes our officers even that much more hesitant to use the force. Now, let's say that's a good thing. On one side, that's a good thing.
Sure, sure.
Until somebody on our side gets hurt. And That's the tightrope that these guys walk
yeah.
every day. And the thing about it, we talk a lot about post-traumatic stress and, you know, the PTSD that gets thrown around a lot. But see, the reality of a first responder who gets up and puts that uniform on a daily basis, they don't have a chance for it to be post-traumatic.
Right.
They live
wow.
in traumatic stress. And yeah, I could tell you lots of stories about guys that have come to me in confidence because they're broken, and maybe they've not had that critical event, but they know that they're just one decision away from it.
And that ends up, because living in that kind of constant state of stress, that bleeds over into the home, and where you're dealing with it's broken marriage and that kind of marital stuff. Is that the number one thing that you guys are ministering into?
I had written a piece for a publication that we put out not too long ago, and I said one of our chaplains visited with a group of 10 first responders. Over half of those in the group had been divorced. Two of them were in their third marriage, and two others were divorced but never remarried and currently live with a life partner.
Wow.
And then you throw in the families on top of that.
Yeah.
See, the families are at risk.
With kids in there.
Right, right. The marriages are in trouble. I'm a promise keeper from years gone by. And one of the things that I remember, one of the, I forget who taught it, but it's they were talking about as a man how we're just wired different than the ladies and than our wives, and the advice was cool down before you go in the house and sit in the garage and pray for a minute, just chill for a minute before you go in. And I've tried to develop this on off switch for first responders. You think about it. I mean, a guy goes and works and. I say guy, and I'm using that interchangeable, whether it's male or female.
Got it.
They go in, and they hit it high for 12 hours, and then they have to go home and be sensitive.
Yeah,
it's tough, man.
That's tough stuff. Tough. Yeah, which is why the divorce rates, and we see that in the military as well, are just sky high. So much wreckage there. We'll talk about some other environments, some other stories that Ralph and his team at Emergency Chaplains have been dealing with for years, and what they walk through. How do you minister and love people well? They're echap.org. Echap.org is their website. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. It's what it used to be. See, I did it. I slip into it every once in a while for 10 years. It was Call to Action Radio. Now it's just the Steve Noble Show, but it's still the same old show. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Talking to a friend of mine today, Ralph Thompson, who runs Emergency Chaplains, which has been around for 10 years now. Now, they happen to be here where I live, the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area of North Carolina. But there's chaplaincies and groups like this all around the country. And it's so important that, we have to balance this out. We see things that upset us, and rightfully so, when it comes to first responders, police, officer-involved shootings, and things like that. But there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes than we ever see on TV, or we see on social media, or we see on cable news or whatever. And so that's really difficult, and we have to remember that these are people made in the image of God that are seeing terrible things. They're involved in terrible things. Some of them are doing terrible things. They're doing things that have to be done. But just like Ralph was mentioning before, one officer who was a really tough guy, a warrior, literally an officer-involved shooting, the person he had to shoot died. And when he showed up at Ralph's house, he literally just kind of fell into his arms and collapsed, like a child, really, because of the emotional weight that goes with all this. So it's really important that we consider this and talk about this, pray about it, and then support it in any way that we can, which is why it's great to have Ralph with us today. Again, Emergency Chaplains is the name of the organization. echap.org is the website, echap.org. And also you can join us here in the studio if you want to on Facebook. We're doing Facebook Live every day. Just go to Facebook and then do Steve Noble Show right there in the search box, and you'll be fine. Hey, I just want to mention to our friends in Winston-Salem who does the show for me. So Kim's over there producing today. Hey, Kim, we might get a couple people that want to call in, so make sure you answer the phones when they call, because we weren't going to take calls today. But I think Anita tried. So, Anita, if you're still listening, try again. And then a friend of mine also served as a police officer out in California, Jeremy, who also works now with Harvest, Harvest Ministries, Harvest Crusades, Pastor Greg Laurie might call in as well. And also, if you're a first responder, and you want to speak into this from your own experience, and you've dealt with a chaplain before, or the need for a chaplaincy from your perspective, you can call in as well. 866-348-7884, 866-348-7884, or 866-34-TRUTH. and we'll get you involved in this conversation. And Ralph, I was talking about with police officers and stuff, but what about just kind of loss of life situations? That can be EMS, that can be police and fire. What's it like to kind of minister into that where it wasn't an officer-involved shooting, but people have died?
Well, for the most part, especially in the larger cities where it's pretty routine that these guys are answering these types of calls, that's the word that comes to mind first. It becomes very routine. That is until it's a child involved. And when it's a child involved, it changes everything. Or, say, for instance, there's somebody there that looks like your mom or dad or your, yeah, one of your grandparents, and it really changes everything. And of course, the game changer is when you're a responder and you roll up on a call and it's actually somebody you know.
Oh, man.
So, and it happens. Even in larger cities, you'll find those types of events. But for our responders, it is automatic pilot when they run into a situation like this, especially with the ones that I remember the most vividly are the ones that involve children. We had a call several years ago where about a two-year-old child had gotten backed over by a lawnmower with the blades running. I'll let your imagination take you from there. But the driver of this lawnmower is the dad, the father of the child. When I came in on that call, I came in to where there was a paramedic who actually had to pick that child up, and because even though life was practically impossible, it's impossible this child would survive. There's still a pulse, and you have there's protocol for that. You got to keep moving. So they keep moving, keep going to the hospital, and the only thing this medic could tell me is that this child looked just like my baby, and that rocked his world, and rocked his world for a long time. Long story short, we end up back at a fire station that night where every respond, this became a community-wide event because it was rural. It wasn't in the city. It was in rural county. So there's a lot of people. They want to do a debriefing. I'm trained to do debriefings, critical incident stress debriefings. So we just take it on, 10:30 at night. I know I'm not supposed to do that by myself, 30 people in the room, but we needed to take action.
Yeah.
And what we end up with is the majority of the people there who were very angry at this dad. And as we took, it was an hour and a half, and as we took this time together, and we went through the seven steps of this debriefing, and if anybody else is certified, you're listening today, I can assure you, if you need to talk to Jeffrey Mitchell, the guy that started, I went through all seven steps. Mm-hmm. But we got to the end, and I just asked him a simple question. If you could say anything to God, and I'm talking about the creator of the universe, and I believe him to be Jesus Christ, if you could stand face to face with him right now, what would you say to him? And this is after a lot of anger has come out, because they're mad, and it's displaced, but it's how they were dealing with it at the time. Most of the time we deal with it with bad humor, but no humor is allowed in a time like this.
Yeah.
So I did a Larry King question, just real softball, lobbed it over in the middle, and just waited, and people began to cry. And what happened at that moment was folks began to look at the real magnitude of the situation. Man, it hurt them deeply, but there was a family who grieved even more, and they remembered why they do this, is to help people.
Yeah, yeah. What a great point. I'm going to go to my buddy Jeremy, who's calling in, who's actually on staff out at the Harvest Crusades with Pastor Greg Laurie and served as a police officer in California. Jeremy, thanks for calling in today. I appreciate your perspective on this. Share whatever you'd like to, man. Thanks for calling.
No, I just thanks for having me on. I just thought it would be great to add a little bit of perspective, and you've already touched on a lot of it. One thing that was really key that you guys talked about was developing that on-off switch, because a lot of times, like was said, you go hard for 12 hours and come home, and your wife and your family hasn't been a part of what you've seen and been a part of all shift. And it's hard to go from, you know, nonstop adrenaline some nights to nothing. And so you got to really learn how to control that. And chaplains are huge. You get them in your car, and it's just like your guest said, you can open up, you can share, you know, your innermost feelings, because there's no judgment. They get to see a lot of it too. And so it's great. It's great to have that kind of outlet to minister to you, because you basically swim through the sewer. I mean, for your entire shift all week, you're never meeting anybody or rarely, I should say. You're meeting everybody on their worst day, the worst moment of their life.
That's right.
And so you're not seeing the best in people, and it's not by their choice that you're experiencing that. So having that Christian perspective and influence and anchor, because you can get swept away in it too, is just great to have, and it's a great blessing for anybody who's willing enough to let that alpha male part of you down and participate in that dialogue with that chaplain in your car.
In your department, Jeremy, where you served, was the chaplaincy and the use of chaplains and that relationship with chaplains, was that pretty much appreciated by everybody?
I think so. I mean, there is like a machismo.
Sure.
There's always those, you know, those little old guys in the back of roll call that are never going to have the chaplain in their car just because it's a generational thing. If I'm a tough guy, I don't need to talk to anybody.
Right.
But I think there's been, especially since 9/11, a cultural shift where departments realize that it's a resource that is valuable. Instead of just internalizing all of those demons, if you will, having those outlets there for guys who are willing to engage is just a huge benefit, and it's a force multiplier, because in the sense of, if I can get my head right and my heart right, I can be more effective in dealing with the rest of society that doesn't have that ability.
Right. What a great point. Jeremy, thanks for calling in and sharing that perspective, bro, and I'll see you next week in Dallas.
All right, man. See you.
All right, thanks, pal. Let's jump over. We're going to go to Anita now.
Oh, okay,
Anita's somebody
cool.
that Ralph has actually known and had some interaction with here back in North Carolina. Jeremy was out there in California. So, Anita, thanks for being patient. Thanks for calling back in. Thanks for sharing. Go right ahead.
I think the biggest thing that you're missing is that Ralph, or at least the emergency chaplains for us in Durham, are part of the team, and they really help give a buffer. I know that Ralph has been there for me several times. We're dealing with very distraught families, and I reach a point where I can't take anymore, and I really, I need to get back in service. I need to distance myself so it doesn't become personal, and that's really what I like to rely on Ralph and his organization for.
Yeah,
they take over.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that part of the team, because we've been talking, and I think a lot of us can assume it's kind of like the add-on thing from the outside, but it's really an integral part, Anita, of your team and your work life is to have these guys be a part of it. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. They get dispatched with us if they already know it's going to be bad, or I can, even on my way to a call, I'm reading the dispatch information, and I can request, can you just start a chaplain already? Like, I know it's going to be bad, and I know that they're going to help us.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, Steve,
Anita, thanks so much for calling.
Thanks,
in
Anita. That's a unique part of our ministry that we do that's different than most chaplain ministries.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that when we come back. We'll talk about, especially for our friends here in the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area of North Carolina, this event coming up on June 14th. But whether you live here or not, this is an important topic for all of us. We need to find out. You need to find out if there's an emergency chaplains group in your city, wherever you're listening today, and get involved and support them. Pray for them at the very least, but support them financially and otherwise. We'll be right back.
So what are we waiting for?
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you today. You can also join us on Facebook. We do Facebook Live Monday through Friday. And again, we're live 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's not necessarily true in every market where we're on, but in a lot of them. And our friends at Wilkins, who we just embarked on a new relationship with them. So that's Indianapolis, Albuquerque, Kansas City, and here in my own state, Asheville, North Carolina. You all just joined us like 3 weeks ago. So we praise the Lord for that and for Wilkins and you guys being a part of it. We've got a lot of other great stations out there that are carrying us live, like KDIA there in San Francisco, right downtown San Francisco. So, but 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern time, if you want to find us on Facebook and join us that way, literally kind of right here in the studio, just go to your Facebook page in the search box, put Steve Noble Show. You'll find us right away. Like the page, jump in on the Facebook Live. And you can be a part of that. And you can also see the show any other time because it stays on there. The website, the Steve Noble Show. com. You can sign up for the podcast there, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. You can grab it that way as well. Talking to Ralph Thompson today, who's the founder of Emergency Chaplains. This is fortunately not unique just to this area of North Carolina, but there's organizations like this around the country providing chaplaincy care and assistance for first responders. So we've been talking about all the different difficult situations you could imagine, not just on the job site, but personal crisis and divorce, which is running rampant and just brutal in the first responders world. But one thing we haven't talked about, Ralph, and then I want to make sure we talk about your event coming up on June 14th, is addiction and suicide. Because this is This is a massive problem.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't
yeah.
it? I mean,
oh, yeah.
I'm not just, this isn't hyperbole. This actually is a massive problem.
No, it's officer, especially in law enforcement, officers much more likely to die of suicide than line of duty deaths.
Jeez.
Same thing for firefighters. Firefighting is a very dangerous profession, and they are more likely. Now, when you add military service, active duty on top of one of those professions, a lot of times they'll bring in some baggage, some post-traumatic stress, yeah. and then things will spin out of control. It's usually not an event that throws them out of control. Now, the events have an impact, but it's usually something personal that pushes them over the edge. And it all has to do, Jeremy was talking about that on-off switch. Yeah. I think we were talking about that while we were not live. But that on-off switch where it's so difficult to take this egocentric, testosterone-driven warrior who has gone at it for 12 hours and battled the demons of the world to come home to a lovely wife, two loving kids, and a dog that wants to get in his lap, and he hasn't processed the day yet. And then things have gone bad at the house for her, and she's ready to unload on him. This happens more and more. Actually, it's common to marriage, but it's magnified with these guys. A lot of folks, people will turn to medication, and when I say that, they'll turn to something to help soothe their just the pain of their life. And the drug of choice for most responders is alcohol. And the reason is because it's legal. They can do that.
Sure.
Because if they do something that's not legal and then they get caught doing that, then it's automatic dismissal. But alcohol can become quite a problem, especially if it's being used more and more to medicate. I have seen officers who were functional alcoholics. I had a guy tell a story. One time, he's retired now, but he would tell a story how he would get off work. He would go into his garage. He would have a 12-pack, and he would put on his BDUs. He could get he would tell how he could put 12-pack in all of his pockets,
Man. And
he could drink all of it before he got upstairs to the TV kind of thing. And then he would talk about blowing the before he would get up to go to work the next morning, because if he has an accident and has any alcohol in his system, he's going to get fired.
Sure, yeah.
So he would blow the Alka-Seltzer to see if he needed to call out. Now, that's a functional alcoholic.
Yeah.
Now, he's been clean now for 12, 15 years. He travels telling this story.
Praise the Lord.
But that's just had the effect that the job and then the family, and then he was a veteran. All those things just kind of intersected, and a problematic marriage came along, and he medicated with alcohol.
And with stuff like that, with addictions, then do you have some partner organizations? Because obviously sometimes they have to get into a program.
Oh, yeah.
It's not something that you can just counsel them out of in a few
sure.
meetings.
Yeah, we're partnered with three other counselors in Durham, where we do the bulk of our work right now, that will take folks to the next level. And then, of course, there's several places that we've been able to partner with that can take them further. But it's a lifelong task once you've become addicted, I believe.
Is suicide one of the most difficult things because you're dealing with the aftermath? The person that takes their life is gone.
Oh, yeah.
But now you have spouse, children, family, coworkers. And I don't want to sensationalize and rank things, but it would seem from the outside looking in that suicide's got to be particularly difficult.
It's difficult for the agency for a while. But it doesn't hold a candle to a line of duty death when it comes to the effect that it has on the agency. The issue that it brings is for the family. What happens, whether it's a suicide or line of duty death, especially in law enforcement, there's a lot of promises made by the agency that no matter how well they fulfill these promises, the family always feels let down. There's going to be a place where they're going to get let down, and all it takes is one failure on their part, and they become very angry. And then I'll have to be the liaison between that family and the agency, and it can get troublesome sometimes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I have to imagine, and then we'll talk about the event, I have to imagine that in the midst of all this darkness and brokenness, that there's plenty of opportunities for gospel conversations, and I'm sure you have to be careful with that and respectful. But tell us a little bit about how the gospel kind of ends up on the table.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. The We borrowed a mission statement from Corporate Chaplains of America. It says that we build caring relationships with the hope of gaining permission to share the life-changing good news of Jesus Christ in a non-threatening manner. And we do that by building relationships, and it's that ministry of presence, ever how we can do that. So what happens, I'll tell you a quick story. I have a responder come to my office one day going through some personal battles, and the greatest personal battle at that point is depression. They're severely depressed, and at that point, I believe, even could be suicidal. And this is when I was a pastor, and I had an office at the church. He comes to my office. He says, "Can I talk to you?" And he comes to my office and sits down, and he tells me his problems. And I'm a trained counselor, so I work with him through getting those on the table. And then I want to tell him the truth that Jesus is the answer for his problems. So I phrase it this way, that I'd really like to tell you how you can find some help for what's going on in your life, but the perspective that I bring is a biblical perspective based on the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the guy looks at me, and of course I throw in, well, I'm a Baptist preacher in a Baptist church, and the guy looks at me, he says, "That's why I came to you."
There you go.
Yeah, they're hungry for it.
Yeah, which is incredible, and obviously that's right. It's a process of relationship. I mean, if I'm sitting next to somebody on a plane, and I've got 45 minutes or an hour or whatever, that's one thing. Somebody you meet in a coffee shop or whatever, there's those times when you just kind of get the brass tacks when you have the opportunity. Yeah. But with situations like this, it really takes time, which gives more credibility to the gospel. That I loved you and served you and tried to help you first, and then the natural extension of that, the ultimate way I can help you is to introduce you to your Lord and Savior. Tell us about the event coming up on June 14th.
June 14th in North Raleigh, we're going to have what we call an awareness event. General Jerry Boykin, who is a war hero, he served as Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence under George W. Bush. You might see him on Fox News as a contributor.
He gets around.
I forget which one of the family life type of
He works with Family Research Council.
That's it. That's it. And I'm sorry. Like I say, I left my notes my desk. But General Boykin's going to be at our awareness event. Hopefully he'll be able to tie traumatic events and traumatic or how soldiers go through trauma and how chaplains help, to how our ministry helps. And we'll be it's just an awareness event. It's not a fundraiser. It's not. It's just a time to learn more about our ministry and to hear from General Boykin. But if you want to, we're going to have 10 extra tickets to that event. It's invitation only. But if anybody would like to attend that event, we'll give away tickets in pairs if you'd like. Just call me at 919-399-9468. That's on our website, which is echap.org.
Say that number about four more times.
All right, it's 919.
That's what happens on radio. You got to just keep beating that drum.
919-399-9468. 919-399-9468. And that website, again, might be the easiest way. ECHAP says echap.org. If you find one in a different state other than North Carolina, when you type that in, it's not us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're the North Carolina
That's
eChap.
North Carolina, yeah. So eChap.org, emergencychaplains.org, and use the contact button on the front page, and you can send Ralph an email that way and just tell him you'd be interested in coming to that. Again, and I appreciate you saying that. It's not a fundraiser, though. I'm sure if you want to give that night, they'd be happy to receive that, and you can do that online. But that's what it's for, is just general information. Or again, Ralph, what's your phone number so people can call you?
It's 919-399-9468. Anybody wants to be a chaplain, feel free to give me a call, too. I'd love to talk to you.
What qualifies somebody to become a chaplain?
Love Jesus and love people, and I'll train you.
Yeah, there you go.
We've got Mission 100, sustainable chaplaincy ministry in every county in North Carolina in the next 10 years. We want to train 500 new chaplains in the next 10 years.
Yeah, because the need is massive.
It's great.
And there's not we don't have enough chaplains.
No.
We don't have enough chaplains in North Carolina. We don't have chaplains.
I estimate we need 3,000.
Wow.
3,000 chaplains.
What a great, great effort. By the way, you're listening on the radio. You're listening live right now. We're coming up on 5 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to wait for you for a couple minutes on Facebook Live. So jump in there and help us pray for first responders. We're going to pray for first responders together right after we get off the air here. And then we're going to pray also for chaplains like Ralph and his team and chaplains around the country. So go to Facebook right now and join us so that we can all pray together for these first responders and these chaplains. Just go to Facebook, look up The Steve Noble Show or Steve Noble Show. You'll jump there right quick. I'll wait for you for a couple minutes. Join us here on Facebook Live for the Steve Noble Show. We'll pray together for our first responders and for our chaplains. Ralph, thank you again for being here today.
Thanks, Steve.
You're very welcome. Okay, friends, we'll be back tomorrow. I'll be live from somewhere in Winston-Salem. And God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.